Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who thinks that Dean's ex-girlfriend should have gotten the fishy this week. I am Rob's sister, Nino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. It's still a mystery who actually got the fishy this week. Hopefully, Steven will let us know on social media at some point. But a woman who has been pondering the same question for, I'm sure, many days now, the First Lady of Podcasting, is here to help me set up the show. Nicole, sister, Nicole, how are you?
I can't get it out of my head.
Yes, I know, I know. That sometimes you just have these survivor riddles just kicking around your brain.
Who got it? Who should get it?
Ugh. Nicole, I'm so excited for the podcast today because we have a really great guest that I'm going to talk to. Sierra Easton of Survivor Blood versus Water, Survivor Second Chances, and Survivor Game Changers. She voted out her mom once upon a time, and she's going to be my guest, and she has not talked Survivor in a couple of years. Really excited to catch up with Sierra.
It's all bottled up now.
It might be all bottled up. It might all come out on the podcast today. So really excited. I always look forward to these interviews where it's somebody that, you know, I haven't talked to in a really long time. And so really excited to catch up with Sierra Easton today after a very busy Survivor week.
Yes, should be a good one.
Should be a good one here today that you guys are in store for. I talked with Cass on the recap podcast this week, and I thought that Cass, rave reviews for Cass across the board.
Of course there is.
Yes. Do you have any stories? Do you remember the time that Cass came to the house?
Very vaguely remember.
It was a long time ago, right? Quite a long time ago. That was going back.
The boys were real little.
Yeah, it was, 5.5 years ago.
Were we even living in this house?
No, it was in the old apartment.
In the place
before this. So.
Yeah, I wasn't sleeping a lot then, so I don't really remember.
Yeah, when were you sleeping a lot?
Never, really.
Yeah. All right. Don't sleep on 39. That's been our kids' motto for Survivor since going back to Survivor 27.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So we've got a lot coming up here with Sierra. Don't forget about the Wiggle Room coming up on Monday. But first, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor. And that's why Nicole is here to help us talk this through. Want to take a moment and thank our friends over at Figs. Of course, what Figs does is a company that makes scrubs that are both stylish and functional for people who deserve it most. That's nurses, doctors, dentists, people who work in medicine and healthcare. I think that they're pretty awesome, just like Nicole Sestrino, who is a nurse.
Yes, and I look pretty good them.
Okay. Yes. Nicole has a pair of Figs. And Nicole, can you compare Figs for people that are sort of aren't all scrubs the same?
They are definitely not.
Why? Why are they different?
I don't know. Do you like to go to work looking all frumpy?
No,
I
like to look very stylish, but comfortable.
Yes. Oh, so you should get some Figs.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be cool if I did if I wore like scrubs to do my like really nice fitting flexible scrubs? Is this like surgery what I do?
It is exactly like surgery. Yeah.
Yeah.
You would be, your clothes would be so soft.
Soft. And also Figs are antimicrobial, protecting you from germs and bacteria. Ridiculously soft.
Moisture wicking. Petri dish up here.
Yeah. It gets very hot and humid here. Four-way stretch with yoga waistbands, a variety of styles from classic straight legs to joggers, skinny styles too.
And you know what? Those the stretchy band on the what is it called?
Elastic.
The elastic band is really good for all those nurse potlucks when we bring in the really bad food that we eat. It just stretches.
Okay. And Figs gives back as well. To date, Figs has donated hundreds of thousands of sets in over 35 countries because they give scrubs to healthcare providers in need around the world through their Threads for Threads initiative. So whether you're one of the awesome humans that works in healthcare or someone wants to say thanks to these deserving folks, Figs is going to make that easy by providing you with 15% off your first purchase when you use promo code RHAP. Get ready to love your scrubs. Head to wearfigs.com. That's WEARFIGS.com and enter our promo code RHAP at checkout. That's wearfigs.com. Promo code RHAP. All right, Nicole, thank you so much.
Now I have to go to work.
Okay. Yes. All right. You go to work. And let me bring in our guest. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our guest today to talk about everything that's going on. Believe it or not, it's been 6 years since we first were introduced to her on Survivor Blood versus Water. She is a three-time Survivor player, and I'm so excited to welcome back the great Sierra Easton. Sierra, how are you?
Hi, I am so excited that you asked me to be a part of this. And you like said 6 years, and I'm like, what? Has it been that long?
Yeah.
That's nuts. That seems like so, it seems like yesterday to me. So to hear 6 years, I'm like, geez, time flies.
Yeah. Yeah, I know it's six because my older son was born during Blood versus Water, and he's six. So yeah, that's easy for me to keep track of.
Good milestone. Yeah. Well, I'm so happy you asked me to do this because I've kind of, you know, had a baby a year ago and I just kind of been out of the loop. I've really been watching this season and I really like it. So I'm really excited to chat about it.
Yes. And before we came on, Sierra, let me know, it's actually her son's birthday today. Her son, Leo, is 1 year old. And we appreciate you making time for us today.
No problem. I'm like, I feel like by your third child, this is my third kid, and everybody's like, are you going to have a birthday party for him? And I'm like, nah, he won't. First off, he's not going to remember it. It's just more work for me. So we're just doing like a little family, like get together later this afternoon. And,
yeah.
You know, your third kid is just like, they're lucky they're remembered.
Yeah.
I know. So I'm like, okay.
We had such a big birthday party for my older son's first birthday, and I really don't remember what we did for my younger son's first birthday. So it is true.
He doesn't know. He doesn't know the difference. I'll just get him, you know, a little cupcake, and I don't know. We'll see. But I'm super excited to make time for this today.
All right. Well, Sierra, first off, how's your mom doing?
My mom is good. She's busy. They have a house in Arizona, so they are here in Oregon sometimes, there sometimes. She's working a lot for our local YMCA, and she's good. She's watching the season too, so we chat about it every week. She actually she called me actually this morning, and she's like, make sure you ask Rob. She gave me a list of things to ask.
Okay, good. Well, yeah, I'm very excited to talk to you one-on-one, though, because that I went back and looked at my records here. And so that I talked with you and your mom a couple times, but we've never really gotten to talk one-on-one since you went and played in Second Chances. Forget even Game Changers.
Yeah, that's like forever ago.
Yeah. So really excited to get into everything that you're thinking and everything that's gone on. So outside of Survivor, besides the family, anything fun going on?
Man, so my husband and I bought a house. Actually, I think I had just gotten back from Game Changer. I think it was Game Changers. We bought a house, actually my grandpa's house. So it's the house that my mom was born in. And it is in this little town called Shaw. So it's like, you know, 15 minutes from my mom's house. But we've been remodeling it, which has been really super fun to, you know, just we're taking it super slow. So it's like been definitely a progress. We've been remodeling it for 3 years, but that's been super time consuming. I'm trying to think what else is new. I graduated from hair school. So I'm a licensed hairdresser. And that program should take the average person like 1 year, and because I left for Survivor so many times, it took me 3 years.
it
was insane. That was like a huge accomplishment for me to wrap that up. Other than that, just living the life at home with the kids, getting the kids to school, running around. I feel like I'm a taxi driver, you know, volleyball and baseball, and you know, just driving everybody everywhere is my job.
Sierra, are you very involved with the remodeling, or are you supervising?
I feel like I'm pretty hands-on.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that. I don't do like the hard, you know, me. I'm like, you do the hard work and I'll kind of like delegate. I'm not like that much for like the hard work part of it.
Yeah.
But, I'm very like, I have everything picked out. So like down to very small details, and I like things done. I just want to do it one time. So I want to do it exactly how I want it. And so I think sometimes my husband gets annoyed at me because he's like, let's just do this. It's cheaper or it's easier. And I'm like, no, I want it done the way I want it done, because I don't want to have to redo it in 5 years. You know, I want it done, and I just want to not deal with it for, I mean, as you know, I plan on living here for at least 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I just want to do it the right way. So I'm pretty, I like the design aspect of it, I guess.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask you about this season. You said that you were into this season. What is it about Island of the Idols that's caught your attention?
I feel like the casting this season is so different from anything we've seen, at least in like recent years. Because, you know, I didn't actually really start super watching Survivor until my mom was on. And that was forever ago now. I mean, that was like season 7 or 19.
Yeah, believe it or not, it's 20 seasons since your mom first played.
It is. Is it? Yeah.
Yeah, because that was 19.
A long time ago. I think it was like 2007, I think, is when she filmed. I could be wrong, but something like that. And
yeah,
that's kind of when I started really following Survivor. And I feel like this cast, their casting this year is so different. And the reason it's so different for me is I feel like we're not seeing the typical people we always see.
Mm-hmm.
These people are so, to me, like the guy next door, the girl next door, the girl working at your local, you know, I don't know, grocery store. I feel like they're just so down to earth, and you're obviously connecting with people on levels that I don't really feel like we've seen in recent seasons. And they're obviously getting into topics that sometimes we don't see. It just seems to be more about the people this season than ever before, I feel like.
Okay. It's a good group. Now, of course, you got to be out there with Sandra in Game Changers, and then you traveled with her after you guys were both out of the game. Well, what kind of relationship do you have with Sandra?
I love her. So it's actually funny. When I was the first person voted out of Game Changers, I sat there at the Ponderosa and I waited, and I kept getting mails sent in. It was like Tony, Caleb, Malcolm, JT, right? So I'm sitting there thinking like, am I going to go on this trip with all guys? Am I going to be the only girl? How crazy would that be? So I just remember when Sandra came in, I was like, thank the Lord, some female backup. And she is just, oh, I love Sandra. We got super close on the trip. Obviously always grooming together and doing things together. She is so, I get why she's such a good player. And before, I obviously didn't, because I hadn't played with her before, but even just traveling with her through Vietnam, she is such a good people. She's such a good people reader. And I feel like she is such a great mentor. She taught me a whole lot. You know, it's actually funny. Sandra and I are really, really different in like our political views and a lot of things. But she is such a great mentor and like such so good at explaining things that I've learned so much from her just on that trip. So I think she's such the perfect candidate to have her, you know, mentoring these people. Not, I mean, obviously given to, she's won two times, so her credentials are legit. But I'm a huge fan of her.
When I talked with Aubrey after you guys played in Game Changers, she told me a story about how Sandra, it seemed like that she really singled you out and targeted you and was a big reason why you ended up going home first on Game Changers. Was that how you remember it?
Yeah. So she definitely, if Sandra says something's happening, that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is about her. I really don't. She can make fun of you to your face, and you'll just laugh. And she just has a way about her of just being very blunt and to the point, and nobody gets mad. But if anybody else said something like that to her, or, you know, if anybody else said what she said, it would be this huge big deal. But she just has a way of doing things and commanding people. And definitely that season, she, for whatever reason, really just had it out for me just going in and knew what she wanted me gone. And that is what she executed, and she succeeded. So yeah, good on her. But I totally think she was the ringleader in it.
Yeah, but that's really nice that you guys have been able to, you know, form a friendship out of that, because there's a lot of survivors that if that was the case where somebody really orchestrated getting them out of the game, that there's no coming back from that. That person is dead to them for life.
Trust me, I've definitely played with people like that, and I can't stand it. I feel like it's just like I go into it really being like, this is a to me. My life, I love it so much, but my life goes on and I take things personal. But
yeah.
Don't you remember Andrew Savage on my season?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know how we are even still today, and that's been years. So yeah. I just try and view it as it's a game, and good on her. She got me before I got her. it, you know, and we move past it.
Sierra, I could totally relate to what you might have experienced with Sandra, because I was voted out by Boston Rob, and I've had a longer time to sit with it, but I feel like I'm good with Rob.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, is it's like, and like you said, it could take a while. I mean, you get burnt, and I understand you wanting to like cross things, and everybody does that at a different time. But, you know, to hold a grudge for so long, or, you know, you got to kind of forgive and forget and move on.
Okay. All right. So let's talk about this episode and what went on at this tribal council this week. And so let me bring in, I have some feedback questions for you from the listeners of the show. So let me play you a voicemail from one of our listeners. And here is Elizabeth in Denver, who has a question for you, Sierra.
Hey, Rob, this is Elizabeth in Denver. Sierra, as the patron mother saint of big moves and survivors, do you feel that Kelly's move was necessary, or was it just a big move for big move's sake? Thanks. Can't wait for the show.
Okay. Sierra, are you the patron mother saint of big moves?
I like that. Sure. I'll accept that title.
Okay. And so...
But I love that question.
Yes.
I love that question, because it's actually, I was thinking that as I was watching it, and they're talking about, you know, to draw rocks. And I love that there were so many people willing to do it. And I think it was Tommy somebody said something about in order to, you know, further yourself in the game, sometimes it requires, you know, to put yourself in a better spot. And that's such a good mindset to have. You know, you can't just live for the day. You got to live for the long-term game. And sometimes you got to gamble. But for Kelly, I'm not a huge fan of giving people idols. Mm-hmm. Like, just in my own gameplay, it's hard for me to think of a time that I would really use an idol for somebody else. So I don't love it, but it obviously worked out well for her. But yeah, I don't know. I just have a hard time with that. I would just like to, if she wasn't going to go home anyway, unless you really, really, really needed Dean to move forward, which maybe she feels like she obviously did feel like she needed him. I just don't know if I see the benefit to it. But, you know, it obviously worked out for her, and we'll see, you know, in the long term if it does.
Yeah, there's been a lot of debate this week where people feel like, okay, well, it was really a spectacular move, and I don't want to take that away. It was amazingly pulled off, and it was great to see that moment of inspiration that she had. There were so many moving parts, but... I just think that it was very early to do this kind of thing. And I don't want to be a guy who's like a hater of really big, exciting moves on the show. But I think that she's going to get caught. Do you?
I totally agree with you. I, as much as I love these big moves, and I think that people, you know, should not be afraid to kind of make their stand, I do wonder if it is a little early. And if it's that a little early to be using, I mean, I guess she had to use her idol one way or the other this week. Right. Mm-hmm. So and if she needed to use it to benefit herself, well, I guess we'll see long term. But I do agree with you. It could have been too early, and it could come back to bite her in the butt.
Yeah. The whole episode really was framed around where Janet went to the Island of the Idols and Rob gave her a choice about, okay, this is all about, you know, risk versus reward. And that he offered Janet the opportunity to play this game. And she said, you know what? It's tempting offer, but I'm going to pass. And she ends up, you know, explaining why. And Rob basically says, hey, that was the right answer. You passed the test, that this wasn't worth the risk that was going to be associated with it. And then we end up seeing this tribal council where I think Kelly did take a lot of risk. And I'm not sure if the risk of all of the different things that she had to do to pull this off was worth the reward of keeping Dean.
Exactly. I totally agree with that. I think that just to keep, like, is Dean that important to your gameplay that you have him there that much longer? Is it willing risking? Now I wonder, is it going to come out that, you know, Kelly gave him that, and then people are going to be like, wait a second, you know, it's like, then she loses trust with other people that you're risking, that he tells people that I didn't find it, she gave it to me, you know. So, and then you're, so she definitely took a big risk. I like it, because I like to see that she obviously really is being creative and like to see what she could do to move forward. But I don't know if that was the best move for her.
Yeah. Now, she has this relationship with Dean from outside of the game through that they have this mutual friend. I know this might be hard for you because you played on a season where you had a very close relationship. It didn't stop you from voting your mom out of the game. But what do you think that in terms of having a person who you have some connection with in the outside world, is that worth a lot out there?
I think it's not. I think it's terrible. And this is my reasoning. And I obviously have something to compare it to with my mom, but she now maybe is overly trusting of Dean, assuming, oh, you know, we have this connection and it's special. But does Dean think it's that special? I just wonder if that could kind of blur her decision making. And as we've seen, obviously, it was that relationship was important to her because she's the idol to save him. And is it, you know, hindering her decision making because she's assuming that, oh, because we knew somebody in the outside world and we have this connection? I mean, so I wonder, can she keep a clear head about it? Whereas everybody else, they're all kind of even playing field, you know?
Yeah.
They're judging their relationships based on what they have to judge them on, which is the last however many days they've been playing. I hope she just doesn't think that become overly trusting of that relationship just because they have an outside connection. I don't think it means anything. I mean, I went in with my mother and it didn't mean anything, let alone some yeah. dude who you knew somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's a good point because I think it's probably very similar to when people go back and play and it's like, oh, pregame alliance. I have a pregame alliance with this person. And just because you sort of like make that bond ahead of time doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to hold up over the course of 39 days in the game.
I hate pregame alliances and I've rarely seen one be successful for that exact reason. And then it also creates animosity when, you know, he does go back on their word and they're like, wait a second, we had a pregame alliance. And it's like, that means nothing. It really, really seriously means nothing. And I don't think Kelly needs to just be smart and realize and not just be over trusting of Dean just because they have, you know, maybe a little bit of a connection. Sure. Can she use that to her benefit? Maybe when talking to Dean, but she shouldn't let it cloud her actual judgment making.
Okay. Let's take another question for you. This is one from another one of our listeners. This is Jack from Boston has a question and wants to compare this vote to a vote that you were a part of in Second Chances.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Sierra. This is Jack from Boston calling. Sierra, this question is for you. So this round, we see both Nora and Kelly play a role in the move to save Dean and get rid of Jack. And it seemed very eerily similar to the move that you, Captain Abby, made in Second Chance to save Spencer and get rid of Wu. And both of those moves seem to be geared toward essentially weakening Jamal and Andrew Savage, respectively, moving forward. However, the one thing I was really shocked by this episode was the fact that Jamal, out of the two of them, stayed in the game. And both Jamal and Andrew Savage seemed to be a lot more outspoken than Jack and Wu, respectively. So what I wanted to ask you is, when you three made that move to get rid of Wu instead of Spencer, how come you chose Wu instead of Savage? And do you think that same reasoning was applied here to get rid of Jack instead of Jamal? Anyways, let's hear your thoughts.
Okay, so Sierra, I happened to talk to Cass the other day on the podcast, and she sends her regards, and we talked about this vote where it was you and Cass and Spencer and Abby came together and voted out Wu right before the merge. Did you think that there's any similarities between this vote right before the merge in this season and that one during Second Chances?
Yeah, I definitely see the similarities, and it's hard. This is a hard one for me. So in my specific season and that vote out for me, it probably would have been more beneficial to get rid of Andrew Savage, looking back, right? Mm-hmm. And he definitely was maybe the bigger, you know, in my eyes for me. But something, though, to keep in mind is in that season, there were so many people from Cagayan.
Yes.
So there was an underlying fear that, you know, Cass, all of them were going to align when it came merged. So that was, that definitely played a role in getting rid of Woo moving forward. And also I kind of, you know, I'm kind of anybody but me. So it, Woo was kind of a really easy target. It would have took a little more convincing, I think, to have Abby turn against Andrew, because yes, they had just gotten back from that. Remember that?
Angkor.
Whatever that.
Yeah.
Whatever. Angkor. Yeah. So they did have this bond, and it would have been harder to convince Abby to turn on Savage, and she didn't like Woo at all. She had it out for Woo.
Yeah.
And
he wrote Abby her name down two times.
Oh, yeah, he did. And she did not forget it. So it was the easiest. It was just so simple. It was cut and, you know, easy. Sure, it would have been more, probably Andrew was the bigger threat and it would have been more beneficial for us. But at that point, we were just kind of, you know, it was mm-hmm. easy to please everybody. Now, to compare it to this vote, I think there's definitely the similarity, because you're saying, you know, is Jack really that big of a threat? It's almost like kind of like a little bit of a scapegoat, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, maybe there was some sort of inkling that there was potential he had an idol, you know, and they were thinking, maybe does he have it? Has he been looking for it? We don't see everything. So that could have played into why they decided to get rid of Jack. And I really loved Jack, so I was really bummed to see him go. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that decision maybe was made, you know, maybe there's stuff we're not seeing. Maybe they kind of thought there's a chance he did and they needed to get rid of his next closest ally.
So for you and for Cass, you guys were both part of the original Bion tribe, which, like Vokai in this season, had the numbers potentially going into the merge. And you ended up, you know, alienating Andrew, who ended up being part of the bigger Bion group. And then obviously when you guys got to the merge, then he was upset about this. And then you guys found yourselves on the outside of the majority. Do you feel like that similarly for Kelly, that you think that she could be ending up on the outside of the Vokai majority if she gets found out?
A billion percent. I think that as great as this move was for Kelly, we haven't even hit the merge yet.
Mm-hmm.
So she's going to go in low on numbers and then potentially, a threat to make a move like that if it comes out she was the one who did it. So she could be a really easy target going into the merge and being, you know, not really having a whole lot of allies. Sure, you gained maybe one in Dean, you know, but was that move really worth it? And I think regardless, obviously, she's in a situation going into the merge where she has a lot of work to do.
Okay. I want to ask you about the discussion that Kelly and Jamal and Janet were having about the women's alliances on Survivor. And let me play a question for you that we got from one of our listeners. Here's Mike in Pittsburgh.
Hey, Rob, it's Sierra. This is Mike Edwards from Pittsburgh. I wanted to ask Sierra what she thinks about the gender alliance being sexist or not, considering that Sierra was a part of the All Women's Alliance, the Witches Coven, and she was against an All Men's Alliance at the beginning of Blood vs. Water. Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks. Bye.
So, Sierra, as a woman who's played this game and been in alliances with women and been in alliances with men, gone up against alliances of all men, what did you make of that conversation at Tribal Council?
I love that they're having it. I really think Survivor, I don't know, this sounds so like, I don't even know how to word this, but I think that it tends to be thought of as a men's game
mm-hmm.
for some reason in society. And even casting in the past, sometimes I don't feel like we're seeing a lot of like strong female presence. And this season is so full. I mean, the women are amazing. I was like going through them trying to think of like, you know, I was talking to my mom and I'm like, who are we rooting for? Who are we not? And it's like, there's so many strong women on the season. I love it. I'm really glad that conversation was brought up. And my thing that resonated with me the most was Janet's comment when she said, you're assuming that because I'm a female, that I'm going to say, you know, woman power, and that I'm not smart enough to say, use my brain and say, you know, maybe I want to work with this person of a different, you know, gender. And I think it is sexist to just assume because they're females that they're gonna all like each other and all want to work together, you know, and to generalize that. And I definitely obviously have been part of female alliances, and that wasn't because I said, you know, I'm a girl, so I need to work with girls. It was because that was what was best for me in my gameplay at that time. And I don't know. I'm glad it's a topic that they're talking about, and it's one that needs to be discussed, I think, in this game, because we do see a lot of male roles and a lot of men, you know, winning challenges and taking over, you know, alliances and being the head of the alliances. So I really enjoy seeing strong females. And then one who comes to mind always for me is Kelly Wentworth, is just such a well-rounded player and such a smart player and such a leader. So I really love this season. There's so many female leaders, you know, and I love that it's being discussed. I love how Jamal was so receptive to it and proud to be a part of the conversation, because, you know, he could have been, I don't know, upset or embarrassed or mad. And he was just so like, oh, wow, you know, I'm so glad that we're talking about this. So,
yeah.
And like I said, that's one thing I do love about this season, is they're having these conversations that we really haven't seen them having before.
So I really like that Mike brought up the experience that you had in Blood versus Water, where you ended up on a tribe, and because of the way, was it RC and her dad? There was a gender imbalance, right? Where there were five men on the loved one's tribe. Did somebody drop out? Was that RC and her dad? Was that what happened?
Something. RC and her dad were supposed to be on that season up until literally seconds before we went to film. But I honestly don't remember the reasoning for that. But they were supposed to be on it. But it wouldn't really make sense, because the people who came in instead of them were just John and Candace.
Yes. So I don't know. I don't know what happened. I don't know exactly what happened. But you ended up on a tribe where there were more men than women, and you Rachel and Katie and Marissa, you know, you guys were on the business end of being on the feeling, I guess, like Jamal and Jack might have felt potentially about, hey, we're on the wrong side of this, you know, all one gender alliance. So in that way, could you relate to what Jamal was fearing?
Oh, 1,000,000,000%. And I think he's correct to feel it and to, you know, well, here's, you know, a good point is that you're going to go through every thought process in your mind, all female alliance and all male alliance, you know, alliance of a tribe, you know, boy, are the Voco people are going to stick together? You know, you're always thinking out there, what could our possibilities of alliances? So it's normal to think about it. And I can definitely relate, because it's actually in so many ways, but on Blood vs. Water, even starting out, you remember it was like Brad Culpepper and Vetus and Caleb and Hayden, and they were pretty much just calling the shots, and John.
Yeah.
And it was like whoever they wanted to go was going to go. And we pretty much sat there and watched four or five votes go of just them calling the shots. And you just kind of accepted it until I realized, like, something's got to change. And that's when Caleb made his big move. So I can relate feeling almost, you know, useless, or then also wondering, wow, should we keep voting out men because the girls are going to have the numbers?
Mm-hmm.
So I understand the fear of it. But I do think, you know, women are, these girls are here to win the game, and they're not going to just say, oh, because you're a girl, I'm going to take you to the end. These women clearly are making moves, and the guy should be a little scared, clearly.
Okay. So let me bring in a question for you. This is Heather G from Tempe, wants to talk about the idea of throwing these challenges.
Hi, Rob. This is Heather G from Tempe. Recently, you advocated for the old Lyro members on Nouveau Kai to throw challenges to keep the Lyro members strong. However, unless there are very rigid tribal lines like in South Pacific, I don't think you should throw a challenge, because it limits the amount of people you have ties with. You may enter the merge with your original tribe in the minority, but you as an individual will have more flexibility to maneuver if your swap tribe didn't go to tribal as often. What do you think?
Okay. What do you think, Sierra, in terms of should we have seen the Vokai group, the group that went to tribal council last week, should they have thrown the challenge this week to potentially knock off another person from the original Vokai now that the four Lyro people had the advantage?
I am so against throwing challenges.
Okay.
For so many reasons, but the thing to really think about, well, for me, Survivor is such a changing game, and it's really hard to expect what the Survivor gods are going to throw at you tomorrow. You know, so as much as you're playing a long-term game, you do also have to, it's this fine balance of living for the future, but playing for the long game. And to throw a challenge is just, anything can happen. I mean, it literally anything can happen. So that's why I hate people, you know, giving idols to people who are not yourselves or throwing challenges. It's like anything to keep you safe a day longer is where your mindset should be. And sure, you should still be thinking, okay, you know, you can't worry about the long game if you never make it there. So it is this balance of, you know, like I said, worrying about today, but planning for tomorrow. And throwing a challenge like that seems so sure they're going to keep their tribe. The goal would be that the members coming into the merge, they'd have the numbers. But come merge time, everything changes. Yeah. And eventually people are going to have to turn on each other. So it's like you want to make it there before you really start worried about it.
Mm-hmm. When you swapped in Survivor Blood versus Water, you ended up in a 3-3 swap. Did that help in some way where that it's like, okay, well, if we go to a tribal council, it's going to be 3 versus 3. So everybody was sort of incentivized to work together.
Was that when I was like the only girl on the guys team?
Yeah. There's you, Caleb, and Hayden. And then there was Tyson, Jervis, and Aris.
Yeah, so that was a very interesting swap, not only because, you know, with all these males, but we did have what I thought was the numbers, but there's, like I said, there's still that fear of, like, I'm the weakest, mm-hmm. you know, so are they going to want to keep the tribe strong and, you know, get rid of me? But yeah, that swap was actually one of my favorite swaps, though, because that's where, you know, for me, my gameplay and all your relationships kind of, you know, started to build, but the thought process wasn't really, like, sure, we wanted to keep our original tribe members together, and same in second chances, the whole talk was Bion strong. So even when we weren't on Bion, leaving Bion, everybody said, keep Bion strong. Don't turn against your Bion members. But it was already happening. Bion had already turned on Monica. So it's like, at that point, it's like, bye-bye Bion. Remember, that's what Josh mm-hmm. just said, bye-bye Bion. So it's like, you can't, those tribal lines eventually are going to, you're going to have to turn on people. So I don't think they're as important to throw a, it's not worth throwing a challenge over.
Right. And that Blood versus Water season is not the best example because you guys had all these relationships with one another from before. So it's not necessarily the best example, but it is a good point where you guys ended up making a new alliance after the swap. And so had the other group been, you know, trying to throw challenges to get people out from whatever tribe, it's like, okay, fine, throw challenges, but we've actually made a new group over here and you don't really know what's going on the other side.
Totally. And in Blood vs. Water, there was so much talk about throwing challenges because people didn't want their loved ones going home.
Yeah.
So if you thought your loved one was at risk, it's like, well, do we throw this challenge and vote one of our people out so that your mom doesn't go home or so my wife doesn't go home or whatever? So that added a whole nother element to potentially throwing challenges.
So do you have any thoughts about who might be the person who's going to go home at this merge? Because it does seem like this is especially crazy.
That's a great question. I'm going to say, I think Jamal is going to go home.
Okay. Why?
And it's okay. So my only thought is he is on the outs of the current, of his current tribe. Right. Mm-hmm. So he's already a little bit of the outs here. He's also a stronger male presence, leader presence. And I think sometimes in the merge, you know, going in, there's going to be a lot of those, mm-hmm. you know, all those strong personalities coming back together. And I think that, you know, the other tribe is going to get kind of annoyed with it. And I don't know. I just have a feeling with all the women that they're all the strong women they're talking about, he might be the guy who has to be the first to go, but I've obviously been wrong before. So.
No, it's very hard to predict. I think that's not a bad pick because I do think that there's going to be with this merge vote, you know, they're just trying to get to an agreement on somebody. And I feel like that the women, I think, would probably be okay with it being one of the guys, especially one of the guys that's from Vokai who doesn't really have any ties. And then when we're looking at like men from the original Vokai, guy that aren't really don't really have like connections to the bigger group, I think that he is a person that you arrive at. So yeah, I definitely think that this is a two-part episode also, that I think that he definitely could be in the mix for somebody to go home who could be potentially a threat to win the challenges. And then also that, you know, hey, he played an idol at the last tribal council, so you know he probably doesn't have an idol also.
Yeah, I'm that's my money's on him.
Okay. All right. I got to really, you know, get a pad out before we get to Wednesday and sort of start to map this out and try to have some guesses. Let me ask you a question that I think a lot of the listeners have. And let's bring in a voicemail from Dylan from Brisbane.
Hi, Rob. Hi, Sierra. Dylan from Brisbane calling. Sierra, it's great to finally hear you on the podcast. I've got a question for you sort of about your perception in the wider fan community, including, you know, Reddit, Facebook, and Survivor in general. You're very closely associated with this Big Moves era, which I think probably had a lot to do with Jeff reminding people that you voted out your you did vote your mum out. I think Jeff told us that a few times. Is this something that you're okay with? Do you like being associated with this particular era of Survivor and this particular sort of attitude to playing the game? Or is it something that sort of, does it irk you being associated as that, you know, that person that has to make a move? Let me know your thoughts. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah. Sierra, this is an interesting question for me to hear as well from you, because you know there is that perception of, oh, Sierra, that's what she just loves big moves. But you said you liked being the patron mother of big moves. So is it the kind of thing that doesn't bother you?
It does not bother me. I guess the only thing I'm super proud of the fact. Like my first season, Blood vs. Water, was definitely, I mean, I was in my early 20s when I filmed, and it was a really life-changing experience for me. It really grew me up, I guess. And I feel I left with so much more confidence in myself. And I don't know. So I'm very proud of the fact that like I'm willing to gamble to win the game. But I will say this, that the one thing that like I would want to make clear to people is that just because I would make a big move, or I think people does it, or, you know, I'm for them. I want people to do what they need to do to further their game. Doesn't mean I don't feel like I'm reckless. And I do think there is a perception of me, especially like going into Game Changers. Obviously it wasn't a great thing for me because people were like, oh, Sierra, she's going to just do whatever, be crazy out here and do all this crazy stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's not, I don't feel like that's what I'm doing. I feel like there's a time and a place for big moves. And I just want to see that people, when that time comes and they need to pull the trigger, that they can do it and they're not scared to do it. Sure, it doesn't mean like you need to do it every other day, or it needs to, you know, you want to be smart about it. Sometimes there's a time and a place not to make a move. Look at Janet. Janet knew, you know what, I could just do it for the experience or do it to do it. And it wasn't the time to do it. And I think that is so great and the best move for her in that moment. I just like to see when people's backs are against the wall, or if right. they feel like they're going to go home, I like to see people fighting for their spot, I guess. So I don't like that people get the perspective that I am like this reckless player, but I love the big moves. I accept the title. I'm proud that I'm willing, you know, to fight for my spot, I guess.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it was circumstances that I think that you've never really been in the majority where you're always fighting for your spot, where if you were in a group that had the numbers, I don't feel like that you would just be, you know, throwing your alliance under the bus for the sake of doing it, right?
Thank you, Rob. Yeah, no, I definitely would not. I mean, like, I feel like I have always been like fighting. So you see that side of me more than you would see if I were in a comfortable position. I wouldn't just be stirring the pot just to, you know, stir the pot. You know, I'm playing to win. So if that means cool down, chill out and sit down, fine. But if that means I need to do something, then I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. And then do you feel like that was a big part of why it was easy for people to write your name down on Game Changers?
Oh, for sure. For sure. For sure. For sure. For sure. I definitely think that I had a really big target on my back, you know, for these big moves. I've known, you know, I was that reckless player. You don't really know what she's going to do. Can you trust her? And like I said, maybe that's not a great thing for me, you know, playing another season and not having people's trust and, you know, and I obviously didn't have a long time to convince people that I wanted to play it maybe differently. So I was in and out pretty quickly.
Do you wish that you would have said no on Game Changers and then come back at a later date rather than play two seasons so close back to back?
Yes, I definitely. I've said this before. I actually originally did say no.
Yeah.
I just really prayed about it, and I just did not think it was the time for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I should have just stuck. I should have stuck with my gut and my, you know, my guns telling me that I needed to wait. But instead, I just kind of caught up in the moment and said, well, let's just go and see what happens. And
yeah,
it turned out well. But like I said, I've learned something from every season, and I'm totally okay with what happened. And I had the trip of a lifetime, and I met some great people, and it was a blessing in disguise, I guess. But yeah, if I could go back in time, I definitely would wait, have waited it out.
But it's hard. I talked about this a little bit with Cass the other day when we were talking about second chances, that Cass said that, you know, she wishes she would have said no on second chances and then gone back at a later date. But they, you know, there's a lot of pressure. And it's like, well, you know, if you don't say yes now, you know, you might never come back.
Yeah. Is there going to be another time? Are you going to be asked again? And then for me in that moment, my husband and I were buying a house. So I'm like, imagine if I won $1 million. So there's like the pressure, like from your family.
Yeah.
But you know, we learned something from every season. And if Cass wouldn't have played on second chances, she wouldn't have met me. And that would have been terrible. So good things came from it.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's anything you could have done differently on the Game Changers? Because it's so that's really, you know, such a scary thing for, you know, every person that thinks about going back, where you show up. I don't think you did that. You did anything particularly that was that bad. And everybody's just like, all right, it's you.
Yeah, I mean, I could sit and say, you know, what could I've learned so much from that. But one thing I will say that I wish I would have done, I really wish I would have really tried to develop a relationship with Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was close with Aubrey. So I was like, I feel like Aubrey and I were fine. And I think Aubrey would have kept me if, you know, the group wouldn't have. But Malcolm was also spearheading the campaign to get Sierra out. And I didn't really do my due diligence to get to know Malcolm, to tell him I want to work with him. I really didn't. I really screwed up by just, you know, I don't know. I never pulled him aside and talked to him. And such a rookie mistake, honestly. And we talked about it, obviously, when he was voted out. And he's like, you know what? Maybe had you have, if I thought you wanted to work with me, maybe I would have. But he didn't even feel like he, and that's just, like I said, a very rookie mistake on my part. So if I could have maybe go back and do anything, it would have been to talk to Malcolm a little more.
Speaking of Malk, Zaddy Taran wants to ask you about how 6 of the 7 pre-jurors on Game Changers were from that Mana tribe. What do you think went wrong with Mana, and any good stories from the pre-jury?
That has to be like the best pre-jury ever. I know there's like people who say that their pre-jury is better, but man, I mean, how many big characters did I travel with? Tony and Caleb were constantly in competition.
Mm-hmm.
And since I was the only girl there, I had to judge everything. Who could throw the ball in the air the highest? Who did the best dive in the pool? Who's the strongest? It was just ridiculous. It was like my whole life was spent judging.
Oh my God, Sierra, watch this. Watch this. I'm gonna jump in the pool.
Yeah, Sierra, rate this dive. Okay, Sierra, rate this dive. No, my dive's better than your dive. And I'm just sitting there trying to relax, but just like loving it. It was so funny. And Tony was terrified of flying. So every time we got on an airplane, we had to like talk him off a ledge. There's just so many great memories from that trip. And then me and Malcolm just really super bonded. We just lived it up in Vietnam. It was just a great group of people. What was the initial question?
Yeah. Well, what went wrong with this group? It seems like you had all these great players there. Why couldn't that Mana group get it together?
I just think too many big personalities,
mm-hmm.
that everybody was kind of scared of each other. So nobody was really aligning. There was just too much fear. It was too much fear. It was, you know, obviously a fear of Sandra. Who's not afraid of Sandra? Fear of me, you know, and my big moves. Tony in the spy shack. Instead of people really wanting to work together, everybody was too scared of each other.
Yeah.
So there was just no progress made. So they just kept getting rid of each other, not realizing, okay, we need to work together at some point because, you know, we got to trust. You can't trust anybody, but you got to trust somebody. You got to find that. You got to find that common ground in some area, and they cannot find it. And so it was kind of like sweet vindication to watch them all join me, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'd just be drinking my margarita every time they'd come in, and I'd be like, "Ha ha, welcome."
Simon wants to say, "Hi, Sierra, longtime fan. The best thing about Game Changers is thinking about the reverse boot list." So you were the winner then, and then Tony came in second, and Beast Mode Cowboy was third.
Yeah, that's okay. Great. I would totally go to Final Three with them. Except that means I'd have to spend 39 days of judging them and their competition. So that's a lot to handle.
So who do you think from this pre-merge has the kind of pre-merge upside that your friend Kelly Wentworth had from Once Upon a Time? Do you see somebody who from this pre-merge potentially could be a returnee and surprise a lot of people?
Okay, so on that topic, Jeff said that Jack is the first member of the jury.
Yes.
So that does not seem very fair. And I know life's not fair, but have they ever had before a merge a jury member?
Yeah, not recently, but it's happened in some of the seasons before. I think that the last time it happened this way, was last season, actually, that we had Reem was on the jury, and so was Chris Underwood. Aubrey was on the jury. So there were people that ended up being voted out, you know, before the merge. But in a normal season, that it turned out, I think that Coach and Courtney from Heroes versus Villains ended up on the jury. I think they like a big jury now.
So, but here's my problem with it. I just don't think, and obviously life's not fair, but my mom made a good point in saying when they got rid of Jack, and now Jack's on the jury. When Jack's vote is placed for who will win $1 million, mm-hmm. half of these people have no blood on their hands with Jack.
Yes.
Like, at least when you merge, it's like, okay, everybody took a role in it. And sure, some people didn't vote for you and some whatever, but half these people weren't even involved in getting him out. So he probably has like a better, you know, viewpoint on the other tribe than on this tribe. I just think that's interesting that, I mean, it'd be interesting to me to see how he perceives the rest of the game and where his vote is placed, I guess.
Yeah, it's a really good point where that we've seen a couple of seasons also recently where in Survivor Ghost Island, when it was 5-5 Dominic versus Wendell, the first five people who went on the jury voted for Dominic to win. And then the last mm-hmm. five people to come off the jury voted for Wendell to win, where they felt like that, you know, Dominic was too rough around the edges, or they felt like they had a better connection with Wendell. But the people that were just sitting on the jury watching it, they were like, oh, this guy's making more moves, going to vote for the person that, you know, they're watching it more like a TV show.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that's going to be super interesting to see how he perceives the rest of the game and where his vote lies. So mm-hmm. I'm interested for that. For your initial question, will you remind me who all is in the pre-jury?
Okay. So we had Ronnie, who was the first person out. And then after Ronnie, it was Molly. After Molly, it was Vince. And then after Vince, it was Tom. There was somebody else that got voted out before, in between Vince and Tom. And it was, Chelsea, of course. Yes. Chelsea and then Tom. And then last week it was Jason. And now
Jason.
Yes.
So I would be interested. I loved Jack. So first off, I'm slightly biased. I really did. I liked him, so I could see him coming back on another season. I thought he was, cautious, but mm-hmm. I think he's very perceptive, and you could tell people really liked him. with the whole tribe. Like, I didn't feel like he really cut off any options, even though he was close with Jamal. I felt like his options were very open, and you saw that with how he, you know, talked to Kelly. And I just thought he was a very smart player from what I saw. I also really did like Molly. Obviously, she kind of knew what her strengths were, and I saw her using them. And so, yeah, one of those two, maybe a potential comeback and surprise you in a further season.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let me bring in a question for you. This is from Liz, who wants to know about what you might what wisdom you might share with future survivors.
Hi, Rob and Sierra. This is Liz from Salt Lake City. Sierra, I just want to say I am a huge fan of yours from day one. I think you are the most underrated player in Survivor, and I really hope we get to see you play again. So my question is, what are your thoughts on this season? And is there anything specific that you might want to teach one of these survivors if you were to be on Island of the Idols? And then finally, in the first couple of visits we see to the Island of Idols, productions made a point of Rob and Sandra reading the rules of Island of the Idols, which explicitly state that neither he nor Sandra have the ability to vote in this season. Do you think that a potential twist might be that they are able to participate in final tribal council without voting? And if so, what are your thoughts?
Okay.
Would love to hear from you guys. Thanks so much.
All right. So a lot of questions there. I guess let's start with, do you have something, Sierra, that you would be able to teach the survivors if they brought you in to teach a guest lesson to the Island of the Idol visitors?
Sure. Yeah. I feel like the one thing that I have learned the most, and so it would be something I definitely would want to pass on, although this seems maybe very obvious, I'm a relationship player, and I just feel like the underdog or the person on the outs or the person that doesn't have the numbers at that moment, they need to be loved and they need to be cherished, and you should never turn your back on them completely because the game changes so quick.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's anything I've learned, it's just, even if you think, oh, this is an easy vote out, 5-3. I mean, look at the vote where Elaine could get, you know, could use, you know, block the numbers, right?
Yes.
Or block the vote. It's like anything can change. So you want to make sure that nobody is going to write your name down. Even if you think the vote is a clear go around, it's really cultivating these relationships with people who feel like they're on the bottom. You know, when Jason early on felt like he was on the bottom and Nora, you know, was kind to him, he even said in his interview that he felt like he owed her something. And you want everybody to feel like they owe you something, right? And so it's like, if I could teach anybody or anybody were going in and they asked me for advice, it would be, don't count out that underdog. And just because maybe it seems like an easy vote doesn't mean that you should dismiss the relationship. You don't dismiss the relationship until they're walking out that door, until they're done and their torches snuffed and they're gone. So just to be aware of even the people who are on the bottom, because the game changes so quickly. So I guess that would be the advice I would give.
Yeah, I think that's really great advice. I don't know how you teach that lesson plan, but yeah, that I have found that in my own Survivor playing experience, you know, that you want to, you know, keep those relationships and never, you know, ostracize anybody from the group because you never know when you're going to need those votes.
Exactly.
That, you know, people want to just like, okay, this is the plan. These three people are next. And then we're just going to, you know, that nobody talk to them because they're getting voted out next, but they're looking for something to do.
I saw that unfold and I learned it very quickly on Blood vs. Water when Tyson, Monica was just kind very much on the outs, and she would have been the easiest vote out from literally like the first day of the merch.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody kind of wanted her gone, but Tyson really took her under his wing, and she trusted him from that day forward. And, you know, and that Monica was a relationship that ultimately got Tyson to the end because of that one move.
Yeah. And you've stayed friends with Tyson over all these years, right?
Yes. Yeah. I love, Tyson and Rachel are good friends. We try and visit them at least like once a year.
Do you have anything that the listeners might not know about Tyson that you would want to share?
I think Tyson can sometimes come off like an asshole, I guess, on TV. But you know what's funny is like when you're really he's not. It's just you got to learn a sense of humor, and and majority of the time he's joking. And so I don't know. I guess everybody is always like, oh yeah, he's so mean, and I'm like, no, you got it's just his sense of humor.
Yeah. No, he's the opposite of mean. He certainly can have that, but I also think that he's one of like the all-time greatest Survivor social players also.
Agreed. I totally agree.
Yeah. When, you know, I've been places with him where, you know, he's just like, walking around and he knows every single person's name and everybody, people are just drawn to him. So yeah, he really has a gift that's like off the charts in terms of, you know, being likable to people that he's around.
Yeah. He's such a well-rounded player because he is great at the challenges. Like you said, he has a way of like remembering details about people talking to you and you feel like, you know, you're super important to him, even if maybe you're not, you know, he really does have a gift. So he is one of the best in my opinion.
Okay. Sierra, can I ask you about what's going on with Dan this season? Do you have any thoughts about the situation with Dan as you've been watching the show?
And like how he likes to like cuddle everyone?
Yeah.
It's a little odd. I think that you definitely need to learn to pick up cues.
Right.
And I think like he definitely maybe isn't very like self-aware. And so, well, he's definitely not self-aware. But personal space and boundaries, as much as like you really have none out there, you have to be able to read, you know, how you're making people feel. And I don't think there's any bad intent at all there, but I'm just, you should be able to pick up on those cues. And the fact that he can't is, you know, I mean, and you know what I do love though, how I feel like the girls are pretty patient with him. So he's obviously not like a bad dude or anything, you know, they are patient, but it obviously still bothers them. Mm-hmm. So he needs to pick up on that, or that's like, how stupid for that to be the reason you go home, you know, like figure it out, Dan.
Yeah, please figure it out. So we saw where Tommy and Lauren were in the situation where they're in an alliance with Dan, but they're also trying to get him knocked out of the game. What did you think about the approach that Tommy and Lauren took this week?
I like the idea. The execution of it was obviously not great because it really backfired. And I mean, we didn't see how it would play out, but you see when Missy's like, they're too close. Mm-hmm. So I like the idea of it, that they're able to come together and say, hey, it's going to be one of us three. So let's try and, you know, push the votes on Dan. But the execution was so bad because you can't let people, you know, you can't let people know you're that close. That's a bigger target than Dan, you know, maybe being a little cuddly, is the potential that they're going to go into the merge with two, you know, numbers is everything. So I didn't love the execution of it. I'm interested to see how that all plays out, actually.
Sierra, did you ever have an experience when you were trying to subtly shift the person that was going to be voted for to somebody else?
I'm not very subtle, because I feel like I've never really been given the opportunity to be very subtle. Mm-hmm. But the Stephen Fishback vote.
Yes, tell me about that.
That was literally, and I'm taking full credit for that vote. So everybody kind of, Joe was obviously very nervous about Stephen. So there was this doubt that everybody's like, does Stephen have an idol? And honestly, Stephen was miserable at that point in the game. Remember, he was having
gastrointestinal distress. Yes.
Yeah. So he was like not, you know, happy. But we were on the outs, and I really just felt like I went around to every single person. And then when we had that reward and we sat there and Tasha said, yep, we're good for Steven. That was like a really, for me in my game, I thought that was it for me. I'm like, this is the vote that gets me the numbers. Like this Steven Fishback vote, the rest of the game, I have a little bit of momentum here now that I had not had the whole game. And then Jeremy just comes in and destroys my dreams. But I did execute it. Like, it's like, had Jeremy not played an idol for Steven, everybody else was on board with me. And that took a lot of work and a lot of, you know, moving parts. But I really did feel like I was a big reason that that happened. And then obviously I went home, so it all didn't matter anyway. But
right. Right. But yeah, I mean, very ambitious move to try. I mean, I think that so many fans had your back to say, please get Steven out of the game.
Right. And it would have, like I said, it would have given me and Kelly and Abby so much more momentum.
Yeah.
Because they were getting scared. At that Savage vote, it kind of shifted because they're like, wait a second, this isn't as easy as we think it's going to be. And I love that people were, you know, a little shaken. And imagine if that would have even worked out, the game would have been a completely different game after that vote.
Yeah. And that was, you know, a big aggressive move to try to pull off that kind of blindside. But that was the post-merge. Do you think that the game has just gotten so fast that we're seeing this type of play in the pre-merge now?
You know what? I would like to say yes. So Second Chances was such a fast-paced game. But honestly, and I'm not a great judge of this because I was only in Game Changers for 3 days, but based on watching the season and having people come join me, that was a pretty slow moving season.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I could predict, you know, that every season from here on out would be as fast paced as Second Chances was. But clearly this game, I mean, they're using idols earlier to save people. Like you said, that vote with Kelly seems a little early, but is it? I mean, if this is that fast pace of a game, maybe it's just the beginning of things we're going to see to, you know, as the game progresses. And I just can't even imagine, you know, what else.
Right. There are definitely way more idols now than there used to be, but it used to be very, very rare that anybody would ever play an idol in the pre-merge. I feel like that there was like only a handful of times that it happened before these last, you know, 5 or 6 seasons.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it is seems a little bit early to me, but Kelly's, she had to use it, correct? That was her last tribal.
It would have expired if she didn't use it on that. And now would she have been allowed to keep it and make it into like tell people it was a fake idol? Like, I'm not sure if she would have been able to like have some other use for it if she didn't use it on that night.
So I understand maybe feeling the pressure to do something with it, right? And if she didn't feel like her name was being written down, I don't know. That whole move, I'm just so against giving people my idols. I kind of am just like, screw you. Figure it out.
Yeah.
If you can't, too bad. You know, unless it's something like we're at your, you know, my back's against the wall and this is the move that's going to save my life. Like, for an example, it obviously paid off when Jeremy gave Steven.
He had two. So that was.
Yeah. He also had two of them. But I'm just saying he got to the end and he won. So that was a reason that it was acceptable. And
yeah.
And Steven was forever in his debt and that worked out for him. So hopefully in Kelly's. Hopefully that works out in Kelly's world too.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about that a little bit more because we saw people playing idols for one another, and now obviously Steven was very indebted to Jeremy, but he also went out of the game very shortly thereafter. Do you feel like does that have a lasting effect? Like how many votes is Dean going to necessarily be super loyal to Kelly that he got an idol from her? Or for Nora and Jamal, how many votes do you think that Nora is going to say, well, Jamal did play that idol for me that time?
I really think it depends on the personality, honestly. Some people, and Steven is one of these people, because Steven is a fiercely loyal player.
Mm-hmm.
He's smart. He's still smart. Steven is so willing to do things, but he is very loyal and And for Steven, I could see Steven being eternally, you know, in debt to Jeremy. But there are people, and I think I'm one of these people as well, and I don't know. For Nora, I could see Nora being, she seems the personality type that she would be loyal. Like, that would mean a lot to her because she's a very emotional player. I don't know about Dean. I don't think that's going to hold a lot of weight for him. Maybe it'll make him feel indebted to her until they merge, but I could definitely see him turning his back on her down the road.
Mm-hmm. Because I do think that it does get on people's nerves if you have to like remind them of like, hey, and just, you know, don't forget I played the idol on you that time, you know, remember?
Yeah.
Remember you owe me one. Like, oh, if this guy brings up the idol one more time, I'm going to vote him out. It's annoying. It's like,
Yeah,
remember, I lent you $20 last week. So, you know, don't forget. Like, all right, I'm going to get rid of you now because of that. It's annoying.
Yeah, it's it's annoying.
Okay. Sierra, one of our listeners, Wanda on Twitter, wanted to ask you, who has the best eye roll game this season? Now, we don't have the jury other than Jack in place, but is that something that you spot, people that can give a killer eye roll?
I guess I'm going to have to pay more attention. I mean, like, obviously, I feel like if I recognize it, it's a good one, right? Because it, like, is one that I'll remember. But so far, there hasn't been anything that I'm like, oh, yeah, that girl's competition.
Yeah. Who did you give the biggest eye roll to?
That's what I'm saying. I don't even really remember eye rolling. Mm-hmm. Obviously, my mom says I do that all the time, and clearly I do. But it's not something that, like, in my mind, I'm like thinking about doing, or I realize I am doing. Mm-hmm. So to watch myself like do that is really funny, I guess. My biggest eye roll, oh my gosh, Andrew Savage. That was the easiest. Those eye rolls were nonstop.
Right. Because he was, I watched this episode the other day because I was talking to Cass and you this week. So I thought it was a good one to watch. But Andrew Savage came to you and said, hey, we're voting out Spencer tonight, but we're going to tell Spencer it's you. And you didn't like that. You didn't want to be the decoy vote.
No. And also, he's the one who was always coming to me and saying, buy on strong.
Yeah.
So if you're so Bion strong, Wu is not Bion. So clearly you're not. Like, it really showed me that his loyalty was to Wu and Abby more than it was to me and Cass.
Yeah.
And he was the one who just kept saying Bion strong. So to me, it was first off, I don't want anybody, like, I'm not going to gamble that we're going to write my name down and there's going to be one parchment that says Sierra and somebody uses it and I go home by accident. So I didn't even like that to begin with. But then on top of that, it just rubbed me the wrong way because he's the one saying we need to stay by on strong and then throwing my name out there. So, and people would always, like, I'd get comments and people being like, what, Sierra's such a baby throwing a fit. And it wasn't really about throwing a fit. I just didn't feel comfortable with my name being written down. And it really just showed me where his loyalty lies. So I was like, no, we're going to make something else happen here. But yeah, I didn't feel like I was doing it just because I'm like, I don't want my name written down. It was all gameplay.
Yeah. Okay. Brian Williams on Twitter wanted to ask you, what production differences do you see from your first season to Game Changers to now? At what point did they start giving you guys disguised Yeti cups for water bottles? Now, Sierra, you're a grizzled Survivor veteran now at this point, six years in. What are the changes that you see from 27 to 39?
Wow, a lot. And that's a really good point about the water bottles. I actually noticed that this last episode. And yeah, I don't think I ever had, I'm trying to remember what my water bottles were. They were like little plastic, you know, I don't know, but not that nice.
Yeah.
That water has to probably stay so cold, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think there's like, they've gotten a little easier on them. Even the amounts of rice I watch them eat, I'm like, what the heck? Like, that is a crap ton of rice. That's like how much rice I feel like I had for like 5 days.
Yeah.
So just, I don't know. I do think they, you know, maybe production's getting a little easier on all of them. I think the storytelling has gotten a lot better. I really enjoy seeing like those special moments. You realize these people are human, and I really like that. I love the game of Survivor, but I really like to see how people get through it and like what their thought process are, and you know, and what their feelings are. And I think they've done a good job of, you know, telling the important stories.
Okay, let me ask you a question. This is from Dave from Ontario.
Hey, Rob and Sierra. This is Dave from Ontario. Just wondering, did either of you notice the giant worm on Jack's buff during Tribal Council? It was around the time when Nora and Jamal were talking to each other about whether or not Nora was gunning for Jamal.
Okay, Sierra, did you notice the giant worm that was on Jack's buff?
No, I did.
I've seen still frames of it. Yeah, it was huge. It was like a giant inchworm was on his buff. Now, I did see you eating some giant bugs this week as I was watching the gross food challenge that was the immunity before you guys voted out Wu. And Jeff made a point of talking about how you really struggled with that in Blood versus Water when they brought it back just to gross Jervis out. So how did you end up improving at the gross food eating?
Oh my God. That's literally my least favorite thing ever. I get anxiety thinking about it, to be honest. But when I figured out it was going to be a food eating challenge, I just cried.
Yeah.
Because you have to do it. And you know what? The fact that Kimmy wouldn't do it, I get that that is more of like, I don't want to say religious. It's a very emotional thing for her.
She ate the tarantula, though.
Yeah, she could do that.
Yeah.
But remember, she wouldn't do the
pig snout.
And so I get it. Like, for her reasoning, I understand it. That's a moral issue. And I like that she really does stand by her morals for that. But for me, it's not a moral issue. It's a I don't want to do it issue. And so I literally, all I could think about is that I'm going to let my team down. Mm-hmm. And I did really good. I didn't win, but I ate everything.
Yeah.
And I didn't quit. And I was really proud of the fact that I literally finished both plates that I was given. Mm-hmm. But I wish I would have definitely had a better poker face because I went in crying and not being able to control myself. So the other tribe was like, oh yeah, make Sierra do it again. So I was like, dang it. Next time I'm going to be like, next time I'm going to go in and be like, oh, I love eating worms. Let me do it. And then, reverse psychology.
Jeff announced how everybody has done it in the past. So that didn't help where he was like, and Sierra wouldn't even try it last time. So
yeah, I'm like, thanks, Jeff.
Yeah. But you held your nose. Did that help?
Kind of. I'd have to smell it.
Okay.
Like smell bad.
Okay. Sierra, we didn't get to talk to you during last season when Kelly Wentworth came back. What did you think about The Edge of Extinction?
I really liked it.
Yeah.
I just love Kelly Wentworth. Like, she's, to me, is just one of the best female players ever. But she did really well. I love seeing a different side of her. Like at her, a little bit more of an emotional side. You could tell she was really making connections out there, which if anything, that would be maybe what she would need to work on. Not that she's not good at it. She is so well-rounded, but I really saw her making an effort for that. And that was a good season.
Who else from your Survivor playing days do you keep in touch with?
So Tyson and Rachel I see pretty often. Aris and Vetus I try and, talk to a little bit. Kelly's in Seattle and I haven't gotten to go see. We're pretty close. I'm in, Salem. So it's like mm-hmm. 2-hour drive. I need to go see her. But I do talk to her and Abby Maria. I pretty much a little bit of everybody. Oh, Tony. Tony and I talk a lot.
Yeah. How is Tony?
Tony's just the
best. I love Tony. Yeah.
Me too. He just is such he's such a character. He's such a good person.
Mm-hmm.
So I do talk to him a lot. I really try and keep in contact with a lot of people. Joe, I just texted the other day. He's getting married soon. So
yes.
Congrats to him and Sierra.
Yes.
There's nobody really. I really haven't left any of my seasons with any enemies. Even like I said, Andrew and I had a hard time, but we really, figured it out and we're fine. I don't seem in contact with him, but I don't have anybody that I, no bad blood. I try and at least, talk to people every once in a while.
Okay.
Social media makes it so easy.
Mm-hmm. All right. This is a question for you from Kim, who writes in, says, Rob and Sierra, I'm curious on your thoughts regarding Sandra during this season. It struck me that on each visit to the Island of Idols, how little input and presence Sandra has had. Rob has dominated the interactions, which I find especially odd this season with all the discussions regarding female impact on the game via alliances, etc. Do you think that the fact that Sandra consistently takes a back seat to Rob is odd at all? Well, what do you think? Have you found that Sandra is deferring to Rob more on the Island of the Idols?
Not really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nothing I've really noticed. I think some of just personality traits. I don't think it really has anything to do with like male or female. Rob is, a little bit more, outspoken and a little bit more of like a leader. And Sandra is as well, but just in a very different way. And I think it really depends who is coming to the Island of the Idols. Maybe they would take more from Rob than they would take from Sandra, or maybe vice versa. They would take more from Sandra than they would from Rob. You know, it all has to do with people's, what they're good, what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are. And I couldn't imagine a better duo to have there, you know, kind of giving some people advice. And they both have different things to offer these people, like very different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in terms of like whatever the lesson plan that they came up with, like whatever is the like, you know, rehearsed part of that, I feel like that Rob is able to probably deliver on that. And I feel like that Sandra, I don't think rehearses. I think that you just get, you know, Sandra, whatever she wants to say, I think that's what she's going to say.
I totally agree with that. And yeah, it's some of it too, just has to do with who's better at explaining these things. And, you know, like you said, Sandra's going to just wing it anyway. So, and then what the stuff she says is gold, but you know, maybe it's just more, you know, reliable to have Rob just, you know, who knows with the editing.
Right. Right. Also, Brian Williams also wanted to say, Sierra, congratulations on making it into the Bryce Isaiah Hot Girl Summer calendar. When are you going to be on the Purple Pants podcast?
I really want to. So this is my story. So yes. Since I had a baby last year, I've just been kind of out of the loop. Not like I still been following Survivor, but I've been really bad about like getting on Twitter and, you know, mm-hmm. doing these podcasts. This is really the first one I've done in a really long time. So maybe this is just like my kickstart, right?
Okay.
Who wants me next?
So Bryce is gonna have you eventually to talk about being in the Hot Girl Summer calendar. What? How did that come about? That Bryce just reached out to you and said, "Hey, do you want to be in the calendar?"
Yeah, he reached out to me, and actually, this is like probably way too much information. It's a little emotional, but obviously it's a baby, so I'm not like this. Like, really, I don't feel like I'm a hot girl. It's timed. He just messaged me and he asked me if I wanted to be part of it. And so it was really special for me because like I said, I really don't feel very hot. So I'm super flattered. It was really, really sweet.
Okay. I spoke to Cass the other day and I asked Cass, Cass, what question should I ask Sierra? What should I talk to her about? And what Cass said was, ask her, does she still wear booty shorts? That's what Cass wanted me to ask you.
Oh my God. I don't even know what to say to that, really. She's obsessed with my these underwear that I have.
Okay. All right.
I have these Halloween underwear that say booty on them, and she thought they were so funny. So just
oh, they literally they say the word booty.
Yes. Like they were literally Halloween underwear.
Right. Like is boo like underlined? Is it like in really big letters? Is it like a boo like a ghost? Yeah.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Very, very festive for this time of year. Sierra, who's gonna win the game?
Oh man, definitely a woman. Okay. Here's who I'm rooting for. I'm rooting for Missy.
Missy. Okay.
Yeah, Missy. That's my. I want her to win. I'm putting money on her. That's
you put
that's
money her on her with who? Your mom?
Yeah, I'm gonna. Yeah, official Laura. Yeah, we should bet on this one because I feel pretty strongly about Missy.
Do you get into Survivor debates with your mom?
Not really. I think we pretty much agree on most things. Okay. To be honest.
Yeah.
We've kind of the same. We've never had. If we do have something come up, it's like, you know, we will bet on it. Really, we do that. Mm-hmm. We do that with The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, too. So if we really disagree, we'll put money on it just to make it a little more interesting. But for the most part, we agree on most things, especially this season.
Yes. Sierra, besides Survivor, what other shows do you like to watch?
Dr. Phil.
Okay. Dr. Phil?
Yeah, I'm obsessed.
Really?
Yes.
So what love do you it. What do you watch Dr. Phil for? That I thought Dr. Phil was winding down.
What? Never. No, he just had like a big milestone of episodes or something. Just I record them all, and then if I don't get to watch it, I'll watch it later. But I just love like the it's something different every day. And sure, occasionally there'll be a dead episode that I won't watch, but for the most part, it's really, really good.
Okay.
And he has like the Fill in the Blanks podcast. I like that too. Big fan.
Oh, you the Dr. Phil podcast.
Yeah, seriously.
Sierra, were you watching the day that the girl told him to catch me outside?
Yes, I was.
Okay.
Yes, I was. Yeah, I totally watched that whole episode. She's a wreck.
She's a big deal now. She's a huge star.
For now.
She told Dr. Phil, I'm going to be a bigger star than you. And now she is.
Yeah, kind of.
Kind of. Okay. All right.
You can't beat Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil, Bachelor and Bachelorette. And anything else?
Oh, man. I do watch a lot of TV. But nothing else that comes up. Judge Judy.
Okay. All right. Well, Sierra, is there anything else that you want to let the listeners know? Any other thoughts you have about the season or real life?
I'm thanks for asking me to be a part of this. Like I said, I just kind of have been out of the loop a little. So I'd really love to just get on and chat with you about it. And I really appreciate all the questions. They were like also thoughtful, and I love, I love the season so far. I love the diverse group of people. I'm really hoping Missy pulls this one through. We'll see how it goes. And just thanks for having me.
Okay. All right. Well, so you follow Sierra on Twitter. She's at Sierra Easton. Is that the same on Instagram?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And Sierra, thank you for spending so much time with us, and get back to Leo on his birthday. Thank you for making time to talk about everything going on.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Rob. It was really, really good to chat with you.
Yeah. And say hi to Laura for me.
Yeah, I will. Yeah, I'm going to see her. Actually, later today, we're actually doing a little gender reveal part. My brother's having a baby.
Oh.
So we're going to figure out the gender of my niece or nephew. So I'll see her later this afternoon. It's kind of a big family day for us. Yeah,
busy day for Grandma Laura.
Yes, it is.
Is that what she likes to be called?
No, they call her Tutu.
Tutu.
it's Hawaiian for Grandma.
Yeah. My mom is Nona. I think that's, everybody likes to have their own name for what they want to be called. Nobody likes I'm Nana and I'm Grandpa.
Yeah. Grandma and Grandpa just make you sound like, my mom's like a cool grandma. So she's like, call me Tutu.
Yeah. All right. Sierra, thank you so much. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Rob.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Sierra Easton here on the podcast. Really fun week on the podcast with Sierra and Cass, but we still have more to do, because on Monday, we are going to get into our Wiggle Room plus This Week in Survivor. And so in addition to everything from the Wand Off this week, we are also going to be joined by Kirsten McInnes, who is going to talk with us about everything going on This Week in Survivor. Last week, I did the social media with Allie Lasher, but we'll be back talking about it with Kirsten and Jordan on This Week in Survivor, and still a lot of stuff to break down from this episode. And then we'll do the This Week in Survivor history quiz. Also, over this weekend, we've gotten very nice reviews so far for the latest episode of Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, where we got our Hot Take Tournament for 2019 going on with special guest Judge Leon Boris joining us to advance quartets of hot takes through our bracket, which was curated by the aforementioned Kirsten McInnes. So you can check that out on the latest Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast. Plus, be on the lookout for Why Jack Lost and the RHAP B&B as well this weekend. Of course, all of this podcasting is made possible by the patrons of Rob Has a Podcast. Of course, did our Facebook Friday as well. So if you want to find out about everything that's going on in our patron community, get access to our patron-only podcast feed where you can hear two patron podcasts every single week. Head on over to robhasawebsite.com/patron. We'll be back with the Wiggle Room on Monday night. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.